from KQED.
This is the California Report podcast. I'm Lily Jamali.
And I'm Devin Katayama. We begin in Central California, which could be on the verge of getting fracked. The agency that manages vast stretches of federal land there is planning to open that land up to oil and gas development.
That's right. And voters in some counties that would be impacted have already rejected fracking, remember? So with this move by the Trump administration, it turns out their votes might not matter. From KCBX in San Luis Obispo, Greta Mart reports.
In 2011, the Bureau of Land Management issued oil and gas leases on about 2,700 acres in Monterey and Fresno counties. But after a lawsuit from the Center for Biological Diversity and the Sierra Club, a judge ordered the Bureau to go back and do a more detailed analysis of the potential impacts of fracking on those public lands. On Friday, BLM's Central Coast office released an updated report necessary to resume selling leases to oil companies interested in drilling.
It's a proposal that opens up as much land as possible for oil and gas leasing.
Claire Lakewood is a senior attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity.
It acknowledges that in some places those impacts can be quite severe, but they nonetheless say that at the end of the day, the interest in producing oil is greater than these impacts.
Gabe Garcia is the manager of BLM's Bakersfield office, which oversees public lands across 8 counties. Last month, it also released environmental documents paving the way to open up many more public lands to fracking.
So there was no finding of a significant impact related to hydraulic fracturing when it comes to new wells on new leases within our field office.
What's unclear is whether fracking bans passed by voters in counties such as Monterey and San Benito would prevent BLM from leasing to companies who might use fracking to get at oil and gas deposits. Governor Gavin Newsom has 60 days to review the Central Coast plan. For the California Report, I'm Greta Mart.
Well, actress Felicity Huffman is expected to plead guilty today for her role in the college admissions bribery scandal. Huffman is one of 50 people charged in a scheme led by a Newport Beach consultant.
The Desperate Housewives star is accused of paying $15,000 to boost her daughter's SAT scores. Huffman has said she takes full responsibility. Prosecutors say they're going to seek 4 to 10 months in prison.
All right. Well, let's take a pause here and introduce you, Devin, because you host one of my favorite shows, which is the Bay Podcast here at KQED. Are you guys going to do anything on this Hollywood scandal? It seems like the perfect show for you guys.
We have actually talked to some younger students in San Francisco about what they feel about the admissions scandal. They're going through admissions processes right now. Mm-hmm. So we got to actually hear from them. It was fantastic.
That's cool, because I feel like I also have nieces and nephews who are starting to think about college. Yeah. They're at the end of junior high or in high school at this point. And, you know, I think there's so much expectation placed on where you end up going. It's sort of like a marker of how smart you are.
Right, right.
And my whole thing, especially after this, is it's really not about how smart you are.
Right.
There's a whole back end to this process that we're only starting to understand.
I think it hit home for a lot of people, too, who are going through the admissions process, who really want that degree from that university that they feel is going to get them to the next step. And to see this play out and to see how money is so influential in the higher education system is just heartbreaking.
Absolutely. Well, you do have an episode this week coming out on congestion pricing, which is possibly on its way to San Francisco.
That's right. Dan Brecky, our KQED transportation editor, spoke to us. And congestion pricing, this idea of like tolling San Francisco streets mm-hmm. in order to alleviate some of the traffic. It's kind of a crazy idea, but they're starting to do it in some other cities and seeing some progress.
Yeah. Well, we're going to switch gears now and talk about the measles outbreak, which, of course, has hit the LA area and other parts of the state pretty hard. We're getting a first look at the cost of this outbreak.
Health advocates say containing and investigating cases of the disease, which has partly been exacerbated by the anti-vaccine trend, comes with this really hefty price tag. From KPCC in Los Angeles, Alyssa Jung Perry reports.
Every time a new or potential measles case is reported, it requires a thorough public health investigation. That means blood tests, informing the public, and tracking down people who may have been exposed. Measles is highly contagious. One infected student at UCLA's campus last month exposed hundreds of people and triggered a quarantine. State Senator Richard Pan, who's also a pediatrician, says that these investigations take a lot of time and money.
Here in Los Angeles, the cost associated with just containing just 3 measles exposures related to travel at LAX earlier this year have already cost county taxpayers more than $80,000.
Pan said the outbreaks of measles have cost affected counties a total of more than $400,000 so far. He has authored legislation that aims to crack down on exemptions from vaccinations for religious reasons. For the California Report, I'm Melissa Jung Perry in Los Angeles.
And that bill Alyssa mentioned will be taken up by a state Senate committee today. Let's go to Butte County now, where 6 months after the campfire, many of the people who once called the town of Paradise home are trying to get the money they were promised by their insurance.
Claims total at least $8 billion. That's more than any wildfire in the state. KQED's Jeremy Siegel reports getting insurance money can be hardest for the people who didn't lose their homes in the fire.
After Misty Attaway and her family were forced to flee from the flames last November, she heard some good news. Her home, unlike the majority of town, had survived.
I thought, oh my gosh, I'm the lucky one.
But now she thinks differently.
I wish it would have burned. And I hate to say that, but the nightmare and the stress and the agony that my insurance has caused me these last 6 months, I'm reliving the trauma every day.
The home next to hers did burn, and the flames were close, causing damage outside and in.
I have smoke and ash all the way through my home, broken glass everywhere. My utilities burned, and I was told to live there.
Attaway says her insurance provider, Mercury, told her she didn't qualify for payouts because her home was standing. After weeks of fighting, she got them to cover some temporary living expenses through June, but not the extensive damages to her roof and water damage and mold caused by intense rainfall after the fire.
Unfortunately, people in her situation have sometimes an even harder challenge getting a fair payout from their insurance than somebody whose home has been completely destroyed.
Amy Bach is the executive director of the consumer advocacy group United Policyholders, which helps people navigate claims. She says Attaway's situation isn't unusual, especially after the large number of destructive wildfires the state's seen in recent years.
Obviously, it should not be that way. I mean, actually, it shouldn't be that way for anyone. I mean, you know, people invest in insurance so that when something bad happens, they won't have to worry as much.
Mercury Insurance didn't respond to a request for comment. As for Attaway, she was raised in Paradise and lived there for decades, so she'd like to move back, but says her home is unlivable. But with the insurance money that pays her rent ending next month and the difficulty of working 2 jobs to cover expenses, Attaway says she doesn't know where to begin. For the California Report, I'm Jeremy Siegel.
And we're heading to L.A. now, where the economic and slow political collapse thousands of miles away in Venezuela is top of mind for many of the nation's citizens who fled to California. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb caught up with one family at the restaurant they now run.
Coffee for Breakfast is a little cafe on a busy street in North Hollywood, and it's serving up some Venezuelan favorites. That's Jenny Gomez. She and her family got the place up and running.
Mira, qué rico. Mira cómo huele. Puro maíz, maíz. Puro maíz, maíz rico.
Empanadas fresco, stuffed with beef, cachapas or Spanish crumpets with cheese, and of course, pabellón criollo, rice and beans served with stewed shredded beef. It is a full menu, but for Jenny and her daughter, Ana Fresina, it is impossible not to think about what's going on back home.
Me da mucha rabia cuando la gente bota la comida.
She feels really angry when people throw away the food.
Porque en mi país muchos no comen, no comen nada.
Because in our country, a lot of people is not able to eat what we're eating here.
Venezuela has seen violent protests in recent weeks and months, and the leader of the nation's opposition party, Juan Guaido, is calling on President Nicolas Maduro to resign. He's refused. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is supporting the opposition, something Jenny and Ana love. Ana says she is hopeful, but it's hard not to fall into despair.
It's not easy to leave a country when it's falling apart. It's not easy to go out and eat when you know that people in Venezuela is starving. There's people eating from garbage.
Mother and daughter are both seeking asylum here in the U.S. because they protested against the Maduro government. Anna says they're glued to TV news and social media every day, worrying about what's happening in Venezuela, all while they try to make it here. For the California Report, I'm Benjamin Gottlieb in Los Angeles.
And finally today, singer and actress Doris Day has died at the age of 97 in her California home. Day graced the screen in the 1950s and 60s with dramas, musicals, and romantic comedies. And she was also an incredible singer. Here she is singing Tea for Two in 1950.
Picture me upon your knee with tea for two and two for tea.
And that is the California Report podcast for this Monday, May 13th, a production of KQED Public Radio. Devin, super cool to have you here today.
Thanks for having me.
Where can we find you and The Bay on Twitter?
You can find us at The Bay KQED and shout us out and we'll get back to you.
And that's hot off the presses. This is a very new Twitter account as
very
of what,
new.
1-2 weeks?
Yeah, I think we have a little bit over a couple hundred people following
all
us
right
now. So be number 201.
I'm 202. I'm actually already following you guys.
Nice.
I am at Lily Jamali.
And I'm at Radio Devon.
Have a great day, everyone.
And start to bake a sugar cake for you to take for all the boys to see.
Support for the California Report comes from Block Construction, a Bay Area builder committed to enhancing communities for almost 50 years. BLACH.com. Energy Upgrade California, urging Californians to keep it golden through simple acts like adjusting the thermostat a few degrees. EnergyUpgradeCalifornia.org. And the James Irvine Foundation, committed to a California where all low-income workers have the power to advance economically. Learn more at irvine.org.